prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adusk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, December 5th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Hey, happy. An incredible day today, and the prices. I know a lot of listeners out there owning gold and silver are not too happy about the price of gold, but certainly all those that took advantage of the prices today were happy. So, you know, it's a mixed sort of a bag out there today. But
yeah, but you know, there's one thing about it. You look at the 30-day gold price. And it goes up and it goes down and it goes up and it goes down, and it's dramatic, and it's something like a sawtooth, you know, like the teeth on a saw. But you look at the 30-day chart and you can see that it started out at 1170 and fell down to 1140 and then bounced back up to 1180 or very nearly and fell down back up. And right now we are, I don't know, we are above. The trend is up for the past 30 days. It's up and down, a lot of volatility, but still the trend is up for the last 30 days.
Well, I'll tell you what, with all the news that was out today, particularly about the job numbers, but if you saw what we'll talk about the USDX and crude oil and the markets and everything, actually, with gold being down, 1420 really was not that bad of a day, considering we've seen what they can do to gold. They can knock it down $20, $30, $40, and just like we saw it go to the upside. So 1193 for gold today. Silver down 19, and again, 1640. I think it's a great day for gold and silver. Certainly,
it's
they're
been
not
a good month for gold and
yes,
silver. It's
it has
not
been
a spectacular month, but it's up over $20 for the month as of this moment.
Yep.
If we were go up $20 every month for a year, we're up $240 for the year. Not spectacular, but not bad.
Yep. So
how many sit bags? Oh, I don't want $240 on a, you know, on a spot of 1,200 or thereabouts. No, that's okay.
Well, you know, when we get into the numbers, I think reality, I think the markets, you know, people know that these numbers can't maintain these levels for a very long period of time. And I'm talking about the stock market prices. And you just can't keep lying or fudging the truth when it comes to the numbers. Everybody's just, you know, everybody on Wall Street is just as puzzled that they're able to keep it together, maybe for different reasons and maybe from a different perspective. But certainly, I know they're all sort of kind of puzzled. Well, they're making millions and billions of dollars off the puzzlement. But
yeah, so don't say anything. Don't say anything. As long as the money is rolling in, let it roll.
Let it roll.
I understand it, but let it roll.
Yep, you got it. So you got the USDX today trading up 0.69, and again, a huge number, 89.33. So again, having gold down $14 really is not a bad day. Crude oil down $1.09. Again, something that had a major impact, 65.72. And of course, the paper markets today, I didn't have a chance to, I followed them for a little bit. The Dow didn't quite hit the 18,000 mark. But it's still up for the week. You have the Dow up 58 points, 17,958. The NASDAQ up 11, 4780. The S&P up 3, 2,075. The 10-year yield, 0.05 at 2.31%. So I guess the biggest newsmaker today was the November's job gains, you know, just kind of went in a rocket ship straight up. Employers added 321,000 jobs in November. This is the largest one-month gain in more than 2 years. And, of course, if you listen to Obama, he was out, patting himself on the back based on these numbers, how great it's been. There's never been a period in history of the United States. In all the history.
In all the history of the world, not just America, but the world.
The world.
Universe.
We've gained more jobs than Europe and Japan and any other country in the world. And he certainly was patting himself on the back. And with most of us, we're scratching our heads. And those numbers far exceeded any economist's expectation. They were only looking for 225,000. So
yeah, but they were dealing in reality.
And they're I'm not so sure they were the ones dealing in reality, because even 225,000 jobs is, you know, probably stretched.
Probably. But here's an article from The Atlantic, and what's behind November's remarkable job search. That's surge. That's the headline. It says, on Friday, the Labor Department announced the U.S. economy had added 321,000 jobs, as you pointed out, the strongest month of hiring in nearly 2 years. Mm-hmm. The news, which defied more modest predictions of 230,000, immediately inspired a digital tape, a digital ticker tape parade. Some were quick to note that the total addition of 2.65 million American jobs in 2014 was the biggest since the late 1990s. November's report also meant that the American economy has added jobs for 50 consecutive months, an all-time national record. All right, well, they go on with that. Now, you know, they give us a few more instances of positive reports, and all I can say is, of course, yay. But with all these record improvements in employment rates, why did the Black Friday weekend sales fall by 11% as compared to last year? I mean, with all these record-breaking additions to our employment picture, why didn't all of these newly employed celebrate by buying more stuff than they bought last year? Or at least buying as much stuff as they bought last year. But instead, they bought 11% less stuff as compared to last year. It is a puzzlement, isn't it?
Well, get this. There was another report came out today. Orders to U.S. factories slipped. Third straight month in October. Yeah. And it would have even fallen more, except there was a huge jump in defense orders. The Commerce Department today says the factory orders fell 0.7% in October, following declines 0.5 in September and 10% in August. You have the demand for machinery, computers, primary metals. They were all down. And another important category that is viewed as a proxy for business investments plans fell 1.6% following a 1.1% decline in September. So how does that offset the 321,000? You know, it kind of does make you scratch your head
and say,
So yeah, military orders jumped 21.2% in October. So, you know, if it wasn't for that, how much of these factory orders would have been down? So, certainly with the strong demand for military aircraft, considering, and of course, you know, everybody thinks this is just a temporary weakness, but again, it doesn't offset, you know, the positive numbers that came out of the employment.
Here's another article from Yahoo Finance. And the headline is Job Report Strongest in Almost 3 Years. How will Fed react? And their question is essentially, what will the Federal Reserve do about interest rates? And they point out that the Federal Reserve has essentially said that it's going to hold interest rates steady for some time into the future. But the report on jobs provided the latest sign that a strengthening job market is starting to spur faster wage growth, a key factor that will help determine the timing. This just cracks me up, of the U.S. Central Bank's first interest rate hike. And they go on, they point out, the average hourly earnings rose by 9 cents in November. 9 cents per hour. Okay? The largest increase since June of last year. After taxes, that's over a nickel an hour. If you're working 40 hours a week, that's an additional $2 a week or $105 a year. So, yay, the recovery is finally here. Americans will now have an extra $105 to spend in 2015. Of course, it's not clear how they calculated the extra 9 cents per hour. I'm going to go home and tell your wife, honey, I got a 9 cent per hour raise. She goes, yay, what a breadwinner. Any case, it's not clear how they calculated the extra 9 cents per hour average. Is that the statistical average of the small change pay increases for only the middle and lower classes? Or does that statistical average include the pay raises for the top 1% and even top 0.1% of the super rich? I'll bet that the pay raise calculations include the pay increases for the elite. If so, then technically, most of that 9 cent per hour pay increase may be the result of pay increases enjoyed by the fraction of a percent of the super rich rather than the middle or lower classes. If so, that means the average American will not be able to thank Obama for his 9 cent per hour pay raise this year. So maybe instead of saying yay, we should say boo, but it just cracks me up. This is one of the things they're taking into consideration as to whether or not they should increase the Federal Reserve's rate of interest. Bankrate.com Washington Bureau Chief Mark Hammack says it will take more than a strong November to move Yellen's timeline up. She said she's going to hold off on this. It may be several months.
Several years.
Yeah, it might be that too. If we get a number of months, and this according to this bureau, this Mark Hamrick, if we get a number of months where we see truly accelerating job creation, not just 1 month, then I think the Fed has to think about a change in the calendar. In other words, they'd have to speed up their plans to increase the interest rates. But I'm looking back and saying, look, haven't Janet Yellen and Mr. Hamrick heard that thanks to the November jobs growth report, the U.S. economy has added jobs for 50 consecutive months in an all-time national record? Haven't they heard that? Doesn't that constitute the number of months that Mr. Hamrick says will be required to cause Janet Yellen to change her interest rates? You'd think that with all the great employment news, the Fed would be eager to raise interest rates. I mean, the economy is clearly in a state of recovery, right? But if the Federal Reserve won't raise interest rates for a considerable period of time, does that mean that the Federal Reserve doesn't believe the jobs report? Doesn't believe that unemployment is falling, jobs are rising, pay is rocketing up at the rate of 9 cents per hour? Does that mean the Fed doesn't believe we are already in a recovery and unlikely to enter one anytime soon? Does it mean that the government's Happy Days economic reports might not be true. If I had to guess, I'd say the government's economic reports of happy days are here again. Just not, it just isn't reality. We can listen to reports from people that we can rely on and view as credible, even though their associated Bureau of Labor Statistics, I think, is where this ultimately came from, was one of the sources. 11% down on the Black Friday weekend, 11% less sales. That's not consistent with all the happy days reports that we're getting from the government. It doesn't mean that one is true and the other one is necessarily false. But it does mean that if the reports are true, that we spent less on Thanksgiving or on the Black Friday weekend for Christmas shopping, if we spent 11% or 10% or 9%, we spent less than we spent last year. Doesn't that belie claims that the economy is much improved over last year? You know, it's not positive. It's not absolute proof, but it certainly is evidence that we're just listening. You know, the government is just, they're kind of blowing our ear and whisper sweet nothings and the rest of that. And my suggestion to all of you is, you know, better hang on to your wallet because these people are out to get something and it's not your welfare and mine.
So is the Federal Reserve going to raise rates just to show some sort of commitment that the economy is doing better, which we all know what happens when they raise rates? You know, so if they don't raise rates, then everybody's going to say, well, gee, and then there's going to have to be some news coming out to tell us that, hey, guess what? The economy is not doing as well as what we thought it was doing. So they don't have to raise rates. So, you know, it's going to come to a point where either the economy is going to start showing the breakage, the truth about the matter, or the Federal Reserve is going to have to raise rates just to support the BS,
the fiction.
That's correct. Yeah. And then we know that once they raise those rates, you know, those cracks in the economy are going to come apart anyway. So
here's another one along those
lines. Although that might not be as immediate, though, too. You might be able to.
All kinds of timing problems here and opportunities.
And that is
problems.
What they'll base their decisions on is the timing. What is the decision that they're going to make that will be able to give them an extra month, an extra 2 months, or an extra quarter?
I've got one here from CNN Money. More Americans are behind on car payments. Just points out that more Americans are falling behind on the car loan payments, but they're still doing a much better job of keeping up with the car loan payments than with their mortgages or credit card payments. And the point behind this, the numbers, as it turns out, aren't enormous. There's about 3%, 3.2% delinquency on home loans, 60 days past due. There's credit card delinquency rates are 2.25%. Mortgage, I have the mortgage rates are in here someplace. They're similarly low. The numbers of people who are delinquent on the car mortgage and credit card payments are still fairly small. By themselves, they don't seem threatening, all right? But insofar as they are growing, they are evidence that our economic reality may be something different than the happy days reported by government statisticians, spokesmen, and politicians. The numbers are consistent with the prediction that the Federal Reserve does not yet see a strong enough economic recovery to justify raising interest rates. And it all suggests, look, we are still in the slough of despond. Despite what the president is saying, and you know, you have to take these numbers and recognize an ulterior purpose for these numbers might be just to get people to go out and buy something for Christmas. It may not be we're just selling happy days. We're trying to stimulate. You're getting rich, folks. Got 9 cents an hour more than you had a year ago. Yay! Let's go out and spend $1,000 at the Costco or Walmart or wherever. While we contemplate whether we're going to spend all that money or not, let's take some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. The program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Excuse me. It's terrible to breathe.
No, it's actually pretty good.
Well, not when you smell.
You talk to the doctor.
Yeah, they did.
The doctor and you say, we recommend you people take a breath of air at least every minute. You know?
Well, sometimes it just, I got choked up there for a moment. Anyway, I guess it's a terrific special. I took that deep breath and it's a terrific special. We're going to continue the 2020 and 20 special. And I was doing some numbers. Regular price on this special is $12.25. We're still going to offer it at $11.95, and that's just such a great deal, even with the little bit of a pullback we've had in silver today. So you can see what type of savings that you receive here at Discount Gold and Silver Trendy. So 20 1-ounce Silver Eagles, 2014s, 20 pre-1921 Morgan silver dollars, very nice condition coins, and of course $20 face value of 90% quarters. It includes your shipping costs, $1,195. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and sign up for our weekly newsletter, and you can also listen to these programs live and archived. So make sure you get to the website. And if we have any callers today, why don't you, if you have any questions for myself or Al, 1-800-596-8191. That's 1-800-596-8191. Lots of times we don't announce the phone number on air. We don't announce an email that you can send us notes or questions. But if you would like to send us a note, and we do encourage that you call us or write us an email, you can send emails to questions@dgscoins.com. So you can do either or, call or send us a note. And for those listeners who listen to the program at a later date and time other than the live program, live broadcast, send us your questions by email and we'll make sure that they get addressed on the next live program. So,
all right, I've got something here, Melody, from...
Do you?
Yeah, I do. Every once in a while we have something here. This is an interesting little story. And it's not profound, and it's the news is temporary. But as you all know, the price of gasoline has been falling. Today's national average, according to petroleum analyst for Gas Buddy, which I believe is an app that'll help you find the cheapest gasoline in your community.
$1.99 in Oklahoma.
That's where we're going.
Yep, I talked about it yesterday.
$2.74. Oh, you did?
I did talk about it yesterday, but please feel free to...
I wasn't aware of that, see? In any case, the national average is a whopping 51 cents per gallon, less than we paid just a year ago. Mm-hmm. It wasn't all that long ago. We were afraid we were going to go to $5 a gallon gasoline, and we are now down to a national average of $2.74. I've seen it at 237 here in Dallas, and that was several days ago. And it's probably even lower than that in places. And up in Oklahoma, $1.99. One station in Oklahoma at least is selling gasoline for $1.99. So those of you on the East Coast, you may want to drive out to Oklahoma, fill up your tank. Melody, are you going to drive down to Oklahoma?
Well, where I'm at, we still have gasoline prices up there around that, you know, anywhere from 240, 250. Premium is a little bit higher, 270. So it's interesting how you can have that big of a gap from 199. And, of course, I do understand areas and so forth, supply and demand and so forth. But that's a big gap.
It may just be an attempt to drum up business and publicity.
Could be a promotion.
Yeah. Could be just a promotion. He might be doing a loss leader for a day or two. Who knows? But he's going to get a lot of publicity, and people are going to come
and
around.
He certainly is. We're talking about it, are we not? We're even
down.
Sure, yeah.
I'm sure this has gone. You know, there's a certain amount. There's a viral content here. But here's another article by Michael Snyder.
Should I sell gold for $1.99?
Well, it depends on how much you're talking about, Melody. If you're talking about a tenth of an ounce, maybe that might not be a bad deal for a tenth of an ounce. I'm not sure it's a good idea for 1 ounce. If you're going to do that, you better restrict it to the first.
That is definitely a loss.
The first person calls in the next 5 seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Didn't make it. Okay, here's one from Michael.
Carla, don't answer the phone.
Guess what happened the last time the price of oil crashed like this? And the reason we're having these low gas prices is because the price of crude oil has fallen something like 37% in the last 5 months. All right? This is an enormous decline. And it's the sort of thing that has put oil-producing nations in a state of jeopardy. They are right now fighting for their, some of them are fighting for their economic survival. You can't take a 37% average business can't withstand a 37% loss of income over a period of 5 months. It's abrupt. You know, if it ends right now, fine, we get back to business as usual. But it puts these oil-producing nations under enormous strain, and it's probably a fundamental reason why none of them would agree to cut production when they had the meeting, the OPEC meeting on Thanksgiving Day, and they all said, nope, we're going to keep selling as much as we can on this, and not just they've agreed that they wouldn't sell any more than they have in the past. They have some sort of limits that are out there, but I'll make you a bet that some of them are so desperate they are going to sell more than they are entitled to sell under their OPEC agreements, all of which will just contribute to an even lower price for crude oil. It will increase the supply. Price of crude oil will fall further. Gasoline will fall further. And who knows? We may have a gas station in Oklahoma a couple of months from now is selling gas for $1.50 a gallon. I mean, realistically, when you figure for inflation, that's cheaper than gasoline was when I was a kid and you could get it for a quarter a gallon. Huh? I mean, this is just a spectacular decline in the price of oil. But Michael Snyder, we've had him on the program once before, and he writes the Economic Collapse blog dot, or economiccollapseblog.com and a couple other, I think he's got a couple other blogs and or websites where he publishes his articles. And he's, you know, we get articles from him are referred to by people around the country. Last time this happened, well, he says there's only been one other time in history when the price of oil crashed by more than $40 in less than 6 months. Well, it's done that in less than 5 months in the current instance. The last time this happened was during the second half of 2008, and the beginning of that oil price crash preceded the great financial collapse that happened later that year by several months. In other words, we went into the Great Recession in 2008, but before we did, the price of gasoline fell by over $40, or crude oil, excuse me, fell by over $40 in less than 6 months. Now, he's implying that this isn't a coincidence. He's pretty much saying when this happens, when the one happens, you can expect the other to follow. Now, we don't know that for a fact. This is a prediction. This isn't a commandment inscribed in stone. But what he says, when the price of oil falls dramatically, it's a sign that economic activity is slowing down. All right, both on the national level and on the international level. Energy companies now account for about 20% of the high yield junk bond market. A junk bond implosion is usually a signal that a major stock crash is on the way. He's saying that our current junk bond market is primarily in crude, in companies that find and or process crude oil. And he's saying that there is a high probability 20% of the junk bonds are from the oil industry. He points out that the United States has become the largest oil producer on the entire planet. Yes, the United States now actually produces more oil than either Saudi Arabia or Russia. This revolution has resulted in the creation of millions of jobs since the last recession and has been one of the key factors that has kept the percentage of Americans that are employed fairly stable. This is primarily based on the oil shale boom, right? United States oil engineers, crude oil engineers, have found a way to extract oil out of shale that had previously been inaccessible. But he says, unfortunately, the oil shale boom is coming to an abrupt end. First off, he points out OPEC is engaged in a price war with the United States. They're the ones that are driving. They are at least partially responsible for driving the price of oil from over $100 a barrel to now down to $65 a barrel. All right? And they're doing that because shale oil is generally not profitable to produce if the resulting crude oil can't be sold for more than $100 a barrel. This implies that right now, at $65 a barrel of crude oil, anyone who's producing oil shale, using shale to produce crude oil, if they're involved in that boom, they're losing $35 per barrel. It can't be sustained. And what he's saying is if the price stays at this level or continues falling, we'll see a significant number of U.S. shale oil companies go out of business and large numbers of jobs will be lost. Everyone could suffer if the collapse in the shale oil industry triggers a wave of defaults through the high-yield debt market and in turn hits stocks. Now, there's conjecture here. Mr. Snyder is saying if the price stays low and if a number of shale oil companies go broke, then a significant number of bonds in the junk bond market are going to default and become worthless. That's going to have, and he thinks that loss of bonds will in turn impact the stock markets. And if it does, we're all sitting, you know, on the end of a serious problem. So he says the bottom line is this: watch junk bonds. When they start crashing, it's a good sign that a major stock market collapse is imminent. And I've commented, is that falling oil and gasoline prices are evidence of deflation. Deflation is the harbinger of economic depression. Again, we see evidence in what appears to be, yay, the price of gasoline is down. Okay, less than $2 a gallon up there in Oklahoma, and at least one station in Oklahoma. That's evidence that we are seeing deflation. It's not absolute proof, but it's evidence that suggests we are approaching and perhaps already in a national and or global depression. You know, we sit back and people think, oh, is the recovery here? Will it start next week? Will it start next month? Will it start next quarter? Maybe the question is not whether the recovery is going to start or how soon. Maybe the question should be, are we already in a national depression or even a global depression? We might be doing them better than the rest of them, but are we technically in a depression? And the answer could be yes. We are certainly close to that possibility. And I'm reminded every time I talk about this, read a book or an article, one or the other, don't recall which, 5 years ago, maybe more, pointed out that during the Great Depression, which we, in retrospect, we look back and we say it started in 1929, but there was no general consensus as late as 1933 that we were actually in a depression. For the first 4 years of what we now say was the Great Depression, for the first 4 years, it wasn't clear to the people whether we were or we were not in a depression. It took 4 years of what, in retrospect, we say, yeah, that was a depression. It took 4 years for people to realize themselves, oh my gosh, we're in a depression. It's not impossible that the same sort of, that a similar time lag isn't in effect, isn't just part of human nature and maybe in effect right now. I don't expect it's going to take us 4 years to figure out if we're in a depression or not, but who knows? Maybe it will. But it's entirely possible that we could be technically in an economic depression right now. When the history books are read, they may say the depression started in 2008, or they may say it started in 2012. But whatever they say, they might say we're already in it in 2014. We may not perceive that ourselves until, you know, who knows, another 6 months, another year, who knows. But I think if you're smart, if you're astute, you're going to have to look around and try to figure out for yourself, are we or are we not in a depression? Because if we are, that changes the nature. You know, that's one of the fundamental considerations you're going to want to view when you decide how you're going to invest your wealth. Are we or are we not in a depression? We're certainly close to it. Despite all the government's happy statistics, as we pointed out earlier, the government may be doing that just to try to stimulate it. Will you please go out and buy something for Christmas? Get in the Christmas spirit. Buy something. Ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. We wish you a prosperous Christmas. We wish you a commercial Christmas. We wish you a commercial Christmas. Da-da-da-da-da. Take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Is your PSA count high? Half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free 866-229-3663 for international callers 704-875-8010. That's toll free 866-229-3663 or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to make mention that we spoke earlier this week about retirement accounts, how folks out there are looking for higher returns because the banks are paying 0% on their money. So they're looking for these high-yield junk bonds. And when they break, I mean, they're getting bigger and bigger. When you have 20% of the energy companies and with the drop in oil prices, I mean, that is just a matter of time and until it does break. And a lot of folks, you know, when you chase these high yields, your risk also increases. And I don't think the people, a lot of investment people that have their funds in these markets really can afford the risk.
I think another thing that's worth remembering is that when we talk about one way of describing these bonds is high risk. They are high yield.
High yield, high risk.
But they are also high risk.
Yes.
And they're also termed junk bonds.
Junk. Doesn't anybody get it?
Yeah. That's the point. And it's not an accident. I mean, they don't want to, well, we're selling high yield bonds. Yeah. You're selling high risk bonds also. And other people in the industry will say, well, those are junk bonds. Well, you need to be able, you know, this is a question of words and language and one thing and another like that, where you sell the sizzle, not the steak. When we're selling, or when some people are selling high yield bonds, that's another way of saying they're selling what some people regard as junk bonds. Mm-hmm. That's just a little bit of, I don't know, a definitional equivalence that's worth keeping in mind when you start going after a bond or whatever investment that appears to be high yield. There's a good chance that maybe it isn't going to work out quite that way. We've got a caller, I believe.
We've got
first caller, it's Dave from Michigan. And Dave, go ahead. What you got for
us? Hi, Melody. Did you see on the news yesterday there was a highway gas station. They had the gas for 24 cents and instead of 240 or whatever it was. And you think the attendant would know for 8 hours they were lining up down the highway and you think people would be coming in laughing about $4 fill-ups. And I tend to think she's probably not working today. But the 8 hours this went on. So they said it was a mistake with the computer.
Welcome to our education.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, new math.
That's right. It's not important whether you get the right numbers. You just got to feel good about yourself when you come to a conclusion.
That's right.
As long as she felt good about herself, sell that gasoline for any price she came up with.
And, you know,
anything else?
If the 45% of the people weren't getting it from the government, and they sure weren't getting that in the 30s, this would be a massive depression. Between the Social Security payout, between welfare and what have you, you take all those government checks out that the people didn't get in the 30s, and this country would just be in total chaos.
It's not just now. This goes back arguably 10 years, 15 years. We have been pushing our jobs overseas. How did the government make up for that job loss? They made up for it by expanding the size of government and putting more people to work in government jobs that are non-productive. They hid the loss of jobs. They shipped them off to China. And nobody essentially complained because they could get other jobs. There were other jobs available, but they weren't productive jobs. They were government jobs. This fueled a growth in the size of government, both at the national and at the state level, local levels. Hire more people to work for the government. Now we have a police state. Huh? All of this is flowing from the idea that we could ship our jobs overseas and get somebody else to do our dirty work for us. And instead of actually working for a living, all we had to do was consume for a living. And it's turning out to be just an idiotic philosophy, which, you know, most of us could understand.
And now, if you work 40 hours at Home Depot, Lowe's, big box stores, wherever, you used to work 40 hours. Now you're working 28, so you've lost 25% of your pay. Well, they can hire more people to fill in the 10 hours everybody's losing. But then on top of this, now you're paying, you've lost your insurance, your medical insurance, which they used to provide with 40 hours of work. So this even hurts it even more. You might be working, and there might be more people working, but they're taking home far, far less. And actually, with the insurance, it's probably 35% less.
Not a new phenomenon, although it's only recently that people have begun to recognize it. And the point is that if it's true that we've been sliding into this problem for 15 years, 10 years, whatever, since they started shipping our jobs overseas, if that's true, it gives us an indication of how long it may take to get out of this mess. You know, if it had just started in the last year or two, okay, we got a tough year or two in front of us and we're back out of the problem. If this has been going on for 10 or 15 years, it's going to take some time to make a correction and get us back to where we are a productive and prosperous nation. Does not bode well for the future.
I think there's three generations in some cases that haven't worked, and they're not going to go to work because grandma, grandpa, mom, and dad, they haven't worked, so why should I? You know, well, you want me to get up in the morning and go to work? Are you crazy? So,
you know,
but.
Oh, one of the great blessings of my life is that my dad had an excavation business, and I grew up in it. It wasn't a big business, but we put in septic systems and dug basements and water lines and excavated around homes, dug basements for new homes, one thing like that. And you didn't stand around on the job. The old man, you better be moving. There better not be anything out there to be done. Why? You're standing around having a cigarette, or you are going to wish to God you had been sick that day. The old man was a real, he worked us hard, but he taught me how to work hard. And there's been, and I know that you can't learn this if you don't do it as a child. You've got to learn that work ethic in a way that may be unpleasant at the time, but there have been times in my life when I have been in a lot of financial trouble, and the only way I got through it, got out of it, is I just worked and worked and worked, and I worked my way. I didn't have brains enough to get out of it. I just worked my way through it and survived. And we're talking about three generations of people where no one has had a real job. There is no work ethic in that family. How are these people going to learn how to work even if you give them a job? They're going to just stand around.
Right.
That's what they're going to do. We are in trouble. You know, this is a problem. And people have been impaired. And so what are we going to do about it, Dave?
Well, you're going to have to grin and bear it because it's not going to change. One last thing, I'll tell you what the condition really is. Last week they showed on Fox News that in the Ann Arbor area, there's a corridor there along the highway that they bulldozed a tent city. And I just saw last night in California, there was a large tent city that just got bulldozed. So this is reminiscent of the 30s and the people living in tent cities.
They've been popping up for a long time.
I understand that, and they become evidence that we are closer to a depression than we are to a recovery. We're not going to see tent cities in the midst of a recovery. I mean, there might be some around, but they would be few and far between. If we see more tent cities, it's evidence that we're going closer to a depression and maybe already in one. We've got another caller. Dave, if you don't have...
That's the good news for the week.
Thanks very much. Appreciate your call.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Dave from Michigan. We've got Jim from West Virginia is waiting on us. Hello, Jim. What up?
We've been in depression for 40 years. Let's take it back 40 years.
Yep.
Real numbers.
Starting
inflation.
Starting when?
Oh, let's say the late 60s.
Well,
rough numbers.
For me, yeah, you could say the late 60s because that's when domestically our currency became pure fiat, 1968, they stopped redeeming anything in silver. You could mark that, or you could start 1971 where they even took gold out of the backing the international, the dollars held in foreign. But for me, the trouble started when we decided we didn't have to have a gold or silver-based currency. What do you think?
Well, we started inflating it with the Vietnam War. Now, it now takes about 120 hours, a man hours of work, a week to produce the same standard of living back then.
Yep.
Then if you spent a dollar, 20 cents of it on average, went to pay the tax burden, the tax overhead of all businesses, now it's between 60 and 70%. We've lost 100,000 in real manufacturing operations since then. So the government says, a fast food restaurant, that's manufacturing. You're manufacturing hamburgers or whatever. Okay, we're about one-fourth of the agricultural production. One-sixth of manufacturing production when you correct it for inflation. And listen, the mainstream media has never given us honest information about economics. But when you look at the real numbers, if this was a depression, if we didn't have welfare checks, we'd have bigger soup kitchens than the depression could imagine. Mm-hmm. So let's just take off the white gloves, the whatever you want to call it, the boxing gloves. It's hard knuckle time, folks. We've been going downhill for 40 years, and the only solution is to decrease the overhead of government. When two-thirds of every dollar you spend, look, you got to understand this, folks, if you don't understand it already. Whenever you buy something, you're paying all the employees' taxes, all the employers' taxes, not just for that business, but for all the suppliers of that business. Now, if we were to take, for instance, all these government agencies, federal government agencies, none of which are constitutional, with maybe a couple of exceptions, 200 plus, decrease their funding 10% per year for the next 10 years, we could get back on our feet. But this will not, the only place this can go is total failure. And any time you jump on the fiat currency wagon, it's going to go downhill until it crashes. Every fiat currency has crashed. There's no way out of it. So just get ready. But we have been in depression. Real numbers besides inflation and unemployment. We've been in depression for 40 years, folks. I think I've said it. If you can't understand that, Bozo, get a brain.
Yeah, and it's one of those things. It's consistent with that idea that they didn't realize they were in a depression from 1929. There was no consensus. Some people understood, but most did not, from 1929 to 1933. It's almost astonishing how we can proceed as if things are just going along fine when any fool should be able to see that they're not.
Lipstick on the pig.
Yeah.
The pig is more lipstick than pig.
Yeah, and even that, it's probably artificial lipstick. It's probably made with, crude oil and high fructose corn syrup. That's where we're making our new lipstick. Throwing a little fluoride and mercury to make it glisten.
Well, the simple truth is this, folks. When I came out into the workforce, that was 40 years ago, roughly, a little more than 40. fish sandwiches, minimum wage. So let's could take currency for fish sandwiches. Because the fish sandwich was 25 cents, $1 an hour was minimum wage. Minimum wage is now $7.50 an hour. That's 1.5 fish sandwiches. The median income is around $27,000. Half the people make less than that. Half the people make more. That's about close to $13 an hour. $13.50 an hour, something like that. That's 2.5 fish sandwiches. So the median income now is less than minimum income 40 years ago. Now, if you can't figure that out, that we are in financial trouble, and we won't get out of it until we release all these government employees and welfare recipients, the banksters being a bunch of them and the others, folks, we're toast. Just accept it. Forget all the gobbledygook. I'm sick and tired of hearing numbers generated by Wall Street and Washington. When you look at Main Street and you see all the closed up factories. Listen, our own government has bombed out more factories than EA.
In this country?
Yes, then the Soviets could have won the Cold War. Why not? Your enemy is not over there.
That's right.
Your local courthouse.
You've taken that oath to defend yourself, defend this country. If you've taken that oath to defend this country against all enemies, foreign and domestic, you might do well to stop looking at the foreign enemies and start looking for the domestic ones, because they're the ones that are killing this country. I can tell you that back when I was, when you're mentioning numbers, when I was a kid, my first job, back about 1958, 59, something like that, I was sweeping up the floors in Blau Motors. They repaired automobiles and sold tires. There was a garage. I swept up for a couple hours after school, and I was paid 85 cents an hour for that work. And people, you sit back and say, how could you get by on 85 cents an hour? Back then, 85 cents an hour was 85% of a silver dollar. Today, that would be the equivalent. 85% of, what's the price of a silver dollar? Say $16, $17 right now. You're talking, I was being paid the equivalent of $15 an hour or thereabout back then, as measured in silver, as compared to what people are being paid today. It's consistent with what you're talking about.
Yeah,
it's consistent, Jim. This country's been ground down, ground down, not by accident, because it's persisted for too long. No one in Congress has stood up to fight against this. No one in the White House has stood up to fight against this. This is government policy, and the government policy is to grind this country down. You want to save it? You got to do something about this government, folks. We're out of time. Jim, I want to thank you for your call. And I'm here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back on Monday. Thank all of you for listening. I hope you have a good weekend, and may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer, Jim from West Virginia, and Dave from Michigan. Thank you, folks. Good night. Goodbye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's you.